Hi there. What you are about to hear is the first episode of the new Page 2 podcast, presented by Chase Oaks Church, where we will go behind the headlines and beyond Sunday morning sermons to discuss in-depth issues of faith, culture, and life. We would love to hear your feedback, and you'll hear more about that at the end of this episode. But for now, let me just say thanks for joining us at the very beginning of the Page 2 podcast.
Okay. Do you ever have any doubts?
Yes, I feel like every Christmas season I have doubts because it just seems like such a hokey story with a virgin birth and angels and all kinds of crazy stuff.
You experience doubt in your Christian experience, and what does that look like?
So to answer your question, I would say absolutely yes, I have experienced doubt. I guess for me, you know, I grew up, I was under this mentality that that God is this sort of reluctant guy that we sort of somehow duped into saving us. I never could get on top of that. It was like failure after failure after failure. Like, hey, you're in the club, but you got to get your act together. And the problem was, I can't get my act. I can't do it. I can't do it. And that creates a lot of doubt. Because then you start going, well, was I even, quote unquote, saved to begin with? Why am I having so much trouble? Why do I keep doing the same things that I did before?
So your journey with doubt is much more about doubting yourself in some respects.
Yeah.
My relationship. Rather than doubting whether or not God exists or whether or not all of this stuff is true or whatever, you kind of doubted, like, am I really saved or does God really love me? Or doubting the whole, you're doubting your own Christian experience, doubting, you know, all of those kind of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so grateful for our friends who are willing to be recorded as they wrestle with their doubts. And it's clear that for Christians, doubt is a tricky topic. What are Christians supposed to do with spiritual doubt? Does the presence of doubt mean that we don't have faith? Or are we supposed to ignore our doubts and just sort of hope they go away or work really hard to get beyond our doubts? Should we expect doubt or should we expect that as we grow in our faith, doubt will become less and less prominent in our life? These are some of the questions we're going to wrestle with here today on the Page 2 podcast, a deeper dive into the issues of faith and life and culture. I'm Greg Holmes.
And I'm Eric Torrance. Well, Greg, we did it. This is the first time we've done a podcast like this. And how are you feeling about your radio voice? Do you feel super confident?
No, not at all. I don't feel confident, and I'm sure my friends are squirming right now listening to me talk.
Do you feel like everybody hates the sound of their own voice, or like a Morgan Freeman? Like, do you feel like, I mean,
He's got to feel good. He can't squirm. I hate the sound of my own voice, for sure.
Well, I'm no Morgan Freeman, but I am here, and I'm glad to be here with you.
So tell me, Eric, as we have talked about launching this podcast, why do you want to do this podcast? What are you excited about?
Yeah, I think for a long time we've wrestled, you and I, as we've talked, with forums where we could dive behind some of the headlines or the sound bites that often dominate our cultural discussions today. You know, when you think of cable news or Twitter, where you have 280 characters to try to get complex thoughts out that are just not covered well in that, or even as pastors, the idea that a 35-minute sermon can somehow cover an entire area of discussion. I think we both have sometimes felt like, man, that didn't quite cover it us. And so I'm excited to have a venue where we can really wrestle with things together and try to get wisdom and momentum around that.
Yeah, I would say the same thing for me. And I think one of the things that's exciting for me, just as you and I have talked about this podcast and made some plans on what we want to do, and it didn't take long for us to fill up an entire whiteboard with topics that we would like to talk about. And experts and other people we'd love to come in and hear from. And I'm just, I'm excited that there's going to be a forum for us to wrestle with those things and really wrestle with issues that where good Christians can disagree.
Yeah.
And I think that will be, I think within our cultural climate and within the climate of Christendom right now, there's a real unease. And so there's a tendency among a lot of churches sometimes or Christians to kind of draw up walls and throw rocks at everybody else. And we're not going to do that. That's not the way that you approach these things, not the way that I approach these things, which might actually make some of our listeners uncomfortable sometimes. But I think that these topics deserve a full hearing and maybe some wrestling. And I'm glad that we will have a forum to do those things because these topics deserve it. So I'm excited.
Yeah, it's almost like there's a in our culture today of which side are you on any number of issues, and you have to pick one side or the other. And I think in some ways we're doing our job if we say, hey, sometimes it's not as simple as that. And sometimes we need to wrestle with the stories of other people who think differently but also have experienced different things. And Jeff has talked about this on the weekend sermons sometimes of his desire for people to interact with stories of different people from backgrounds. And quite honestly, a number of times I don't have a person in my life with that story. And so I think what I'm excited about too with this podcast is the ability for us to maybe introduce some stories to people who may not have those people in their life, but they want to hear from them.
Right.
And say, okay, what has been your experience with faith or with this issue, and how can that maybe shape and mold the way I interact with God in this topic
right,
in my life?
Right. And I think sometimes maybe there's a little bit of fear, like we don't want to maybe be exposed to things that are maybe contrary to what we've thought before, or something like that, or there's just aspects of culture or even of our Christian experience that we're sometimes a little fearful to talk about. And I think that our topic today is a great example of that, because doubt is something that is probably very much more common than we actually admit within Christian circles. But it's also one that can be – it's also a topic that is very disconcerting and can also be dangerous and also can also be powerful. And so to kind of jump in to a discussion about doubt specifically, I brought some stats,
Eric,
for you. So
Educate me.
Okay. I want to ask you how you respond to these stats. So Barna, the smart people at Barna, did a survey of folks who are professing Christians and asked them the question if they experience significant spiritual doubt. 26% said yes currently. 40% said yes in the past, but not currently. So that's roughly two-thirds. And then roughly one-third, or 36%, according to this survey, said no, never. So about two-thirds of people, either currently or in the past, professing Christians, say they've experienced significant spiritual doubt, and about one-third says no, never. How do you respond to those stats? Does that surprise you? Is that right where you would think?
Well, I mean, it's not surprising to me. If anything, and maybe this is from my own experience, that seems a little low to me.
Which seems low?
It seems low that only two-thirds have experienced doubt. Because, I mean, you know, as a pastor in the church, and maybe you've gotten this from people too, people come up and almost with a hushed, sense of like, do you have doubts? You know, and my first response is, no, never. And of course, that's not true. I do have doubts, and I've experienced doubt and the pain that comes from that. So not surprising to me. If anything, I would think it may be a bit higher, and maybe people just aren't willing to talk about it.
Yeah. For me, when I saw those stats, I thought at different times of my life, those stats would have been surprising in different ways.
Hmm.
Because I think in a certain season of my life, when I was just very, very sure of everything, it would have been very surprising for me to hear that two-thirds of Christians have significant spiritual doubt, because I wasn't having any.
Yeah.
Now that I've been a pastor for a long time and have wrestled with things in my life, it's surprising that one-third of Christians haven't experienced that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I
yes.
would think, like, what, you know, how is your experience so different than mine? And so, and I imagine that sort of pendulum swing, or, you know, that it's just, is probably not atypical, you know?
Yeah, and I think maybe part of it is when people hear the word doubt, they think of different things sometimes.
Right.
Whether it's doubt that a loving God could love them, which is an interesting kind of doubt. It's a faith-based kind of doubt where God exists, but, you know, would he care about me?
Right.
Then there are emotional or even more situational doubts where if you're going through just a really tough time, it's like, is God really there? And then there are those philosophical, theological doubts, which I have a feeling in the church world oftentimes get the most press as far as apologetics ministries,
right,
and
right,
books and reason and all that. And I certainly, I mean, those have appealed to me. But I think it's interesting when you, the more people you talk to and you hear it, there is nuance to the way that they'd word doubt. And so I've learned that even when you hear serious doubts, are we talking about serious doubts in some core theology, or is it just serious doubts like, my life is really difficult right now, and is it worth it to keep following
right,
God?
Right, right. All right, another set of stats I want to ask you.
Yeah.
So Barna asked, and I think this is a fascinating question that they would think to ask this, but of Christians, professing Christians that have gone through seasons of spiritual doubt, they asked a follow-up question of sort of that subset. If they stopped doing things like reading the Bible, going to church, that kind of stuff during that season of doubt. And so 45% said they stopped attending church during that season. 29% stopped reading the Bible. 29% stopped praying. 25% stopped talking to family and friends about faith. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it shows us the seriousness of doubt, that mm-hmm, it's not merely just a, you know, something in our head. It does
right,
guide our action. And so while doubt clearly is very common, it does have an impact on our life. It is something that is not just a passive issue for us to talk about, which is why I'm glad we're
right,
actually wrestling with it together, because it can take you out of
yeah,
faith or really introduce some very harmful
parts. At least derail your Christian experience in your Christian life. Because then there was another follow-up that of the Christians that didn't do those things, you know, 87% of Christians in that study who sort of remained faithful, going to church, that kind of stuff, 87% said that seasons of serious doubt increased their faith. So I think that, and that's one of the reasons why we wanted to wrestle with this the very first time, the very first podcast, is that doubt, it's incredibly powerful. And it can take us, it has the power to kind of derail everything. And like, and we check out of Christian experience and all that kind of stuff. It also has the power to really strengthen our faith. And it kind of depends on how we respond to it. And so I'm intrigued about what you just talked, one of the things you just mentioned a couple minutes ago, just about the different types of doubt and the different, because in my head, I'm starting to think of like different experiences in the Bible or even different people that I know. It's like doubt is, maybe it's not a one size fits all.
Yeah. It's interesting when one of the things that most encourages me about the Bible and about the authenticity of the Bible, to be honest, like something that would encourage me in my faith when I have doubt and am wondering, is this true, is that the Bible is so open about people that doubt in
right,
Scripture. And you would think that that wouldn't be the case. I mean, why would that serve any purpose to have people that are going to become leaders in the church wrestling with it?
And it would seem like doubt would be the absolute opposite of what God would want
exactly,
for us.
Exactly.
Or model for us.
If you're like, hey, why would I put in – I mean, why would Peter, the first leader of, you know, the rock that, mm-hmm, you know, that Jesus appointed, say, hey, you're going to lead the church when I'm gone, that the Bible includes a couple of significant moments of doubt for him. One, the walking on water story
right,
is pretty famous, and then – and then two, like even when he denies Jesus, and pretty much all the disciples at the end of the day denied Jesus. So there is a substantial amount of doubt that's in the Bible, but there are differences of what maybe causes that doubt for people that is interesting. You know, there's some of it's just life circumstances. Job is probably the best example of that, where right. it's like, man, his life, there was a significant testing and just thing after thing just kind of pulled him from there. Or you have discoveries where it's like, hey, something, they learned something that just didn't make quite a lot of sense somewhere along their journey. A passage you and I both love is John 6, where mm-hmm. the disciples are hearing a very hard teaching from Jesus about eating his flesh and drinking his blood. And we now know, looking back, hey, this is probably what this means. But right. in that moment, that was a new aspect that they didn't quite understand. And that's a very philosophical problem that they right. run into.
And a lot of Jesus' followers turned away.
A lot of them did. Yeah, yeah right. a lot of them did. And so I think it's encouraging to me that I don't have to try to put doubt completely in one box.
Right.
But it is, in general, when I think of defining it, just some kind of factor that makes me have a feeling of uncertainty,
right.
you know, that whatever I had been basing my life on left me wondering, is this true? You know,
right.
Would you, one, I don't know if that matches up with kind mm-hmm. of your experience, but two, like, you know, as you've thought of doubt in your life or times where it's popped up, how would you characterize that? Or has it been mainly philosophical, or is it experiential, or was it,
yeah.
what was behind some of that for you?
You know, I think, as you just sort of illustrated, there's different types of doubt and different types of seasons. And sometimes doubt can feel very disconcerting. And I've kind of grown, though, to also understand, like, other types of doubt are just not that big a deal, because maybe it might be I'm doubting something I was taught when I was raised, but I understand that it might not really affect core beliefs and, you know, those types of things. And there's probably room for doubt. I think for me, probably the most disconcerting doubt happened, golly, 12 years ago, before I came to Chase Oaks, going through very, very different ministry experience, mm-hmm. praying, believing in my heart that God was for me, that he loved me, that he was sovereign, that he wanted the best for me. Me sincerely praying for God to give guidance on what, you know, what to do with my life and, you know, all of this and steps that I need to make, and really hearing nothing in return, and causing me to doubt, am I just talking to myself here? Is God actually listening? Does he actually believe? Because when days turn into weeks and weeks turn into months and months turn into years, you can start to think, am I just being punked here? You know, is God even there? Is this, and as someone who is a pastor at the time, that is, hard to wrestle with, you know? And then there's different sort of nuances of that, of like wondering, okay, well, maybe, you know, I believe that God is there. I, you know, but does he really love me? Can I really count on him for things? And how does that even show up? And so, those are the ones, you know, those are the ones that I remember. And yeah. as a pastor, when I have conversations with people who are really grappling, it's usually at that kind of level.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I would say similar for me. I've had a feeling at different times in my life where I wasn't experiencing something that other people seemed to be experiencing.
Right.
Which was incredibly disconcerting or discouraging, that either there was something wrong with me and my makeup, mm-hmm. that I maybe wasn't as committed as I needed to be to God, or that God really wasn't there. And
right.
And I've known other people that had the same thing, where they've walked into a room of people worshiping God, wishing deep down that they could be there,
right.
you know,
that they had what they had.
And it made me think of, as we've talked of different biblical examples, it makes me think of the, you know, Thomas, you know, the one mm-hmm. that carries that label of doubting Thomas, which stinks for him that's his label. But it made me feel a kinship with him, that there were the disciples and, you know, the different followers that had experienced the risen Christ, that Thomas hadn't had that same experience, and that even when Jesus showed up, it still didn't connect with him in
right.
the same way. And I loved the encouragement that the Bible included a story like that, and that even the way Jesus approaches Thomas is not the, you idiot, get out of here. Right. It was, hey, with compassion. But I think that's how I would characterize my doubt, is that I've wondered, am I missing out on something? And there certainly is sometimes some theological or philosophical things, the going to college and having a professor who
right.
loved tearing down
right.
youth group Christians mm-hmm. and giving things on the historical Jesus that I had to work through. But yeah, it's just I think it is interesting that doubt is something that the more I've talked with people, even though, again, maybe they wouldn't feel it the way I did and their brain doesn't work the way mine does, that I think almost every Christian either has experienced it, or I would wonder, hey, if you're not experiencing it, I wonder why, or if there hasn't been a part of that in your journey, I just wonder, have you asked all the questions that you need to, that when life
right.
does give you one of those circumstances, it may cause you to question things bigger than you were expecting.
Right. And I think, and maybe sometimes, you know, even when we look at the one third of the Christians who say they never doubt, maybe there's an experience that they are experiencing. They just don't call it doubt.
Yeah.
You know, because I think, it seems to me, let me bounce this off.
Okay.
Let me bounce this off of you. It seems to me that there is, that for all Christians, we have a set of stated beliefs, you know, doctrinal beliefs. This is what I believe to be true about God, about the Bible, you know, all of those things and the Christian experience. Then we also have a set of, for lack of a better term, just sort of practical beliefs that help govern our daily behavior. You know, and those beliefs do show up, and because of those beliefs are governing our daily behavior. And I think for very few of us, I mean, ideally those are intertwined,
yeah.
and there's integrity there. I think that's pretty rare, and that disconnect between what we say we believe and what we actually believe, like daily, like practical beliefs, you know, that are the beliefs that are actually governing the way that I work or interact with people or the way I handle money or like all of those things, those practical beliefs, there's a gap there. And sometimes I think that most of us or for some of us most of the time just sort of learn to live with that disparity. But sometimes that disparity just becomes unlivable. Or becomes painful, or becomes just painfully wide, and that when that becomes really disconcerting, that's what we would call doubt, and that has caused, I know, some people to wrestle to the point to say, or to come to the conclusion to say, you know, for me to be a person of integrity and not a hypocrite, I probably need to admit that my practical beliefs, the beliefs that are governing my daily behaviors, those are the only beliefs I really have. You know, because otherwise, I mean, is it really possible to be a theological Christian and a practical atheist at the same time? You know, and like that. So it's caused some folks to say that whole, what I say I believe, if it's not affecting my life right now, then those beliefs aren't even real. You know, like that's not an actual belief. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think as people journey with us in this podcast, I'm a little more of a concrete thinker. You're
right.
More on the creative, smarter yeah. thinker than me. So you need to, in a sense, dumb it down for me to this level.
Okay.
To say, could you give me an example of a stated belief not matching up with
gotcha.
Maybe a practical
yeah.
belief?
Yeah, so I can believe and state that as a Christian, I believe that God is in control. But if you were to parachute in my life on a given Tuesday or whatever, and be in my head and watch my behavior, you would say that my practical belief is that I'm in control. Or I could state, I believe that all good things are given by God's grace. And I can say, I fully believe that. But if you were again to sort of parachute in my life, you'd say, well, actually, what Greg actually believes is that all good things are earned by merit.
Hmm.
And so Greg doesn't actually believe that God is in control. And Greg doesn't actually believe that. You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
my practical behavior is
yeah.
the only belief that I really have.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I think there's a tendency, and I get what you're saying on there. Mm-hmm. I think there's a tendency to get to be too harsh on ourselves, you know, to the point where, you know, no... We all have a level there's a level of disconnect between where we are at and where we hope to believe or what we hope to to have our lives ascribed to, that there's a gap there for every single person. I think of so many, there's a worship song that comes to my mind that I think of that we've sung in our church and different churches around. I'm sure I've sung it. It's a great worship song, but it's I think it's Never Stop is the name of the song. Right. And it's like, I will never stop loving you. And you're like, actually, I have practically, like, I do that every day, you know,
during the song.
Yeah. I have stopped because I'm thinking about this even right now. I'm stopping for a moment and that's not good. And I don't want to. And yet the song is aspirational. I mean, there's there's a part I'm singing something that if you were to look in my life is not true. And yet I still think there is value that comes from an aspirational faith where we cry out to God to say, God, I am not fully here yet, but you know that.
Right.
And I am saying beliefs that I know I wish I could live into more. And so, yeah, I just wonder if that's too harsh.
Yeah. And I would tend to agree with you. Yeah. I'm just, as I wrestle with some of these things, it does become disconcerting, you know? I do think, I would agree with you that that our faith is aspirational and that's probably one of the roles that worship plays, you know, is that we remind ourselves that we believe. And it's probably where growth comes in, you know, because there is an already not yet all over the Christian life.
Yes.
And so we are, there's something true of us that's also not quite true of us. And we have to, and so we learn to sort of live into or live up to not just a standard of behavior, but probably a standard of faith, that there's a level of faith and a level of dependency that we're not quite there yet, which is pretty difficult when you're in the midst of that, as God is stretching our faith and causing us to, and not just sort of backing up the dump truck of faith. So we just like have it all, you know what I mean? And everything is sort of certain. So,
I mean, I guess we could say that when we think of doubt, that if someone who's listening right now is experiencing it, that they can hopefully feel comforted in the fact that it's probably more common than they might think. And it's certainly more, especially when you're in the moment of doubt where maybe you feel like you are missing out on some experience or you are somehow a more fake version of Christianity than other people, that in actuality that is not true. If anything, they are joining a club of people who at any various points of their life are probably experiencing some kind of disconnect.
Right.
And so that's comforting to me,
right,
to know that when I'm in the middle of it, that, okay, I'm not as weird as maybe I think in
right.
the moment.
Yeah. And I know the verse you and I have talked about, the Mark 9:24, where, you know, a follower of Jesus says, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. That's incredibly encouraging to me, you know, that someone would have the courage to say that and to recognize that belief and unbelief are happening at the same time, and that Jesus doesn't shun that person for saying that.
So for this next segment, we wanted to address a particular passage of Scripture that deals with the issue of doubt directly. To do that, we decided to talk to the most scholarly New Testament expert we know, Dr. Daryl Bach. Dr. Bach is a senior research professor of New Testament studies at Dallas Theological Seminary, and he was gracious to chat with us.
Okay, are you there, Dr. Bach?
I'm here.
Thank you for joining us for the Page 2 podcast, and we wanted to phone an expert, and you graciously gave us some time because we're talking about the issue of doubt. And there's a verse that many of us have heard used as kind of a weapon if we've ever faced doubt or kind of confessed doubt to someone else. And that verse is from James 1, and the verse is from verses 5 to 8, where it says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. And I've heard that verse preached at me a number of times. And in some ways, if I'm a person that is struggling with doubt, it's hard not to read that and to feel like I'm a bad Christian, and I'm basically messing up big time. And so I'd love to just ask you, what do you think is going on in this passage? Is James talking about all kinds of doubt, or is there any other way we should be thinking about this as far as who he's talking to and in the context and everything?
Yeah, well, I mean, the key part of the passage is right in the first part of verse 5, where it says, if anyone is deficient in wisdom, he should ask God. So that tells you the topic. This is not about any and everything that you think about God, et cetera. It's when you approach him, do you believe that he is ready, willing, and able to give you wisdom? And so that's the context. That's about what you shouldn't doubt. You should understand that God is a generous God, that he's not a begrudging God, that he doesn't hold things back, that he's capable of giving you what you need, that he wants to give you what you need. There's a passage in Jesus's teaching that says, you know, if a son comes to you and asks you for an egg, do you give him a scorpion instead? And then it goes on to say, and if you being evil know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will the Father in heaven give wisdom to those who ask him? So that kind of thing. So this is a very circumscribed text, and it's designed to say it's hard to expect God to give you something if you think that he is incapable of giving it.
You're right. So when the Bible, because there's another passage, not too much further, at least in the New Testament Bible, where it's in Jude 22, where Jude talks about just having mercy on those who are doubting, and so it just seems to me as like, man, it's almost like the Bible feels like it's contradicting itself, where in one way it's like, hey, it's okay to have doubts. And then in this other places where it's a little bit stronger on that. And so you would say that the doubt in like Jude is different than the doubt that James is talking about.
Yeah, and you can't read the Psalter without realizing that there are people who are wrestling with God about the circumstances that they find themselves in, and some kinds of sense of injustice that they feel like they're experiencing. However, now many of those Psalms work through that. You know, they start out with doubting, and they allow for the openness of expression about where the person is in relationship to God. And in most cases, in the midst of that psalm, they work to a resolution about trusting God, having laid it out there. I think that one of the things that the Bible wants us not to do is to suppress what we're really feeling before God, and or to deny its existence if it's there. And we should be much more like the people in the Psalter who say, man, this is where I am. I'm wrestling with this, but I'm turning to you for help. And then hopefully in the midst of that, people gain reassurance about God's involvement with them, that kind of thing. So, and then there are places where people, you know, really do wrestle with that. I mean, doubting Thomas is another example.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to believe it till I see it. I mean, we even describe him with doubt. And the text is pretty clear about people who, on the one hand, you know, have to see it to believe it, but, you know, the blessedness of people who don't need that in order to be convinced, that kind of thing. So the Bible has a lot of space for how we think about doubt.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thanks for taking the time.
Glad to do it.
Just really appreciate it. All right.
Okay. You
All
have
right,
a good one.
Care. All right. Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
So, if doubt is common, if not normative, within the Christian experience, not just in our Christian experience, but all the way back in New Testament times, we've also seen that it is it's powerful. It's powerful for either good or for ill in our lives. So, Eric, let me just ask you the question. So, when you think of doubt as possibly a good thing, in what way could it be, or give me an example or circumstance that doubt can actually be a good thing?
Yeah, somebody once worded this to me. I forget who said it. Maybe you know, that doubt is the ants in the pants of faith.
And I have not heard that.
Okay.
Now it's stuck
in your head, for better or for worse. But the idea being that doubt for me, and I know when we've talked about mm-hmm. this, that doubt often leads to discovery.
Right.
Discoveries that we would not have gotten to without questions that maybe we've wrestled with, or situations where we've had to go through and see God show up in a bigger way.
Right.
And it doesn't excuse the circumstance or make it good in and of itself, but that we can look back in that experience and be like, you know what, my faith is deeper and more robust and richer because of it.
Right.
Another way I've thought about it sometimes was that maybe early in my college career, and certainly in high school, I felt like my faith was pretty it's almost like a plexiglass or some kind of – it was fragile in the
right.
sense where everything carried equal weight. And if you got a crack in one part of mm-hmm. my faith, it would shatter the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that through different episodes of doubt in my life, I feel like there are parts of my faith that are pretty well developed that feel really rock solid, that are
right.
harder to shatter. And there are other parts that are further from the center that maybe I've learned to mm-hmm. hold more loosely. So I would say doubt can be a very helpful thing in helping us refine our
faith. Clarify.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think I would also add, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier, that sometimes when we allow ourselves to doubt, we can actually push into some of our assumptions a little bit, and which is a super helpful thing, because I think it's really easy within Christian communities to treat beliefs like they're not beliefs, to treat them like they're assumptions, you know, and to where we say we can just sort of believe of others, other people or whatever, like that we can sort of believe that if they were just thinking right, or if they were a good person, they would naturally agree with me, you know, because it is so self-evidently true. It's just sort of, and you just sort of assume things and you don't really research it, you don't, or whatever. That can be very disconcerting when you find yourself in a different type of circumstance, you know, where there's a different set of assumptions.
Yes.
Like that high school, you know, youth group person who goes off to college.
Yes.
And now there's a totally different set of assumptions. And all of those things that they just sort of believed were self-evidently true aren't self-evidently true anymore. And so when we, but when we're in an environment where we're free to ask questions or free to push in or whatever, that could seem somewhat threatening to our beliefs, but actually it is, questioning our assumptions will ultimately allow us to defend beliefs that are actually need to be defended.
Yes.
You know, because some of the things that we can treat as self-evidently true are wrong.
Yes.
And we need to be able to research or whatever and know what is it that we need to hold on to tightly, you know, and what are the things that we need to lighten up on.
Yeah.
And when we don't doubt and we don't question and we just, I think that, and certainly the church is not the only type of institution or organization that is guilty of this, you know, political organizations or social organizations or scientific organization or whatever, you know, within that community, you can, you know, it can be taboo to question the assumptions.
Yes.
You know, and that is, it's unhealthy. It's unhealthy to do that.
It's kind of the polarization of the country in general
right.
that's going on, where it's saying if you're a part of any group, politically, civically, whatever it is, that if you are a person that starts to question some of those assumptions, that you could find yourself in a pretty strange space.
Right.
But I would argue ultimately a healthier space as well, that you're a more well-rounded person. It's why whenever I've thought of times of doubt in my life, or if I run into somebody that has doubts, I like to share with them that I feel like there are unique opportunities that people that find themselves having more doubts than maybe other people do, that there's a unique opportunity that they have to actually connect with a wider swath of people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll even pull out like a napkin and say, hey, at some point, you know, we all have to make a jump of faith.
Right.
But some of us require a lot more before we're willing to make the jump. And I've been in situations where that's been looked down upon, like, oh, you just need to have more faith. And again, at some point, we all need to. But I think the person that requires a lot more research or thinking or discovery or whatever, they will always have more opportunities to connect with anybody that is in that same spectrum along the way.
Right.
And I've found that to be incredibly helpful, that the people that have made a difference in my life have wrestled with doubt and could enter into that space with me with words and with thoughts, whereas the person that has not experienced that, it's harder for them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say there is an opportunity with that to pull us, to connect with God or connect with more people, and to be used in an interesting way. But with that, Greg, I mean, you and I have also talked about how there is some unhealthiness, that doubt. I mean, it is a serious thing. As you've thought about, you've used that word with me. Hey, sometimes doubt can be unhealthy.
Yeah.
What does that mean for you? How have you seen that pop up in people's lives?
Yeah. I think there's multiple ways. Actually, the first thing that pops into my head is probably not what I would have said maybe a few years ago, but I think that doubt, from a pastoral perspective, I think that the first thing that pops into my head is when doubt becomes paralyzing, because I think that some of the people that are listening are just fine with doubt. You know what I mean? Like, their world is full of doubt.
Yes.
And sometimes I think we can use doubt as kind of an excuse to not make decisions with our lives and say, well, I'm just not sure about anything, and at some point you just got to make a decision and you got to move forward. I think that doubt can be a wonderful thing when, just as you described, when we research or when we, really explore, press in and develop our relationship with God, or those types of things, and ultimately get to a point where even when there's not full certainty, we're willing to say, well, I'm close enough for me to make a decision. And even with some lingering doubts, I'm going to move forward and make a decision. Like, we have to get there, but if we can't do that, in the spiritual realm, or even in practical realms of people that are unless they know for sure what their career is going to be, they're just afraid to make a step at all. Or, it could be someone who's dating in a serious relationship, and that person that they're dating or serious relationship, it's just awesome, and they check all the boxes and all this kind of stuff. But there's that little percentage of well, what if there's someone a little bit better, or there's just a little bit of doubt. And it's dude, get over it.
The commitment phobic culture, or whatever.
That's our need for certainty can be paralyzing.
Yeah.
And certainty, especially within the spiritual realm, certainty can't be the goal. And I think that's hard for people to hear, but certainty can't be the goal. And so when doubt becomes paralyzing and causes us to not make a decision, then that's going to be.
Well, and you as an artist, I'm sure you feel this all the time, where it is easier to be a critic than it is to be the creator of something. And not that we're creating faith in this discussion, but it's this idea that it's easy to be the questioner.
Right.
That sits off the side, the skeptic who wants to just be the skeptic. It is much harder to actually step into the arena of faith, much like even with work, with creating works of art, where it's it is much harder to actually be vulnerable and say, this is who I am and what I believe or what I've made.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's an unhealthiness that can happen where somebody can almost always be asking the question without willing to do the hard work to actually
come to a conclusion or to an answer somehow. Right.
Yeah. And I would imagine with that's where we have to think about it when we're thinking of our own heart with doubt when they come. That for me, it's almost like there's times of doubt where I don't really choose it. It's a feeling that comes of uncertainty, and I need to not be ashamed of that feeling or feel like there's something wrong with me. But I think there's a difference between that and when times where maybe I've chosen to right. doubt, where it's like, I'm just going to stay here.
I'm just going to camp there.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that that's incredibly unhealthy, and one that even the Bible seems to speak a little bit more seriously about that person
right.
that would say that almost like the skeptic or the scoffer
mm-hmm.
That we see in the Psalms, where someone is just always lobbing at faith. And I don't think we can that can describe that as a healthy place to be.
Right. And have you seen with people of that type of temperament, when you sort of approach life that way, that it can almost become like a self-fulfilling prophecy
yes.
for them?
Yeah, it's almost like if you are always doubting whether God will show up in my life or why hasn't he shown up in
right.
my life, like in general, I've seen, well, then he doesn't show up in your life. You in a sense, are not inviting him in.
Right.
There's always the unique example that maybe someone where that does happen, where God knocks Paul off of the horse, you know,
right.
on the road to Damascus. But it's like in the most cases, if we are constantly questioning, constantly opposing, almost like the Pharisees in Scripture,
mm-hmm.
where the Messiah is right in front of them, if they would only change the way that they would be asking questions and thinking, that it's almost like they got to a place where they couldn't see the Messiah.
Right.
And,
right.
And that's where I don't want to be.
Yeah, right. You know, I think you mentioned the John 6 passage a little bit earlier in our discussion, and I think it's just really helpful when we talk about how the unhealth or healthy sort of responses to doubt, because you know when Jesus talks about eating my flesh and drinking my blood, and all of those followers turn away except for the 12. And he turns to the 12 and says, are you not going to leave also? And their response is, where else are we going to go?
Yeah.
You have the words of eternal life. I think that verse is just super helpful to me, because I think that Jesus' teaching was just as hard for them as it was for the ones who left. But they had sort of come to a place where they said, we have seen, they have all kinds of doubt. They have all kinds of questions. So many things are unclear. But they weren't going to let it paralyze them. And they said, well, where else are we going to go? You know, the
yeah.
gap of faith, of leaping over, was smaller for them to continue on faith than it was for them to turn away from Christ and go somewhere else. And so I think that doubt can be really, really unhealthy if we camp there, if we stay there, if we say that we can't really make a decision and move forward in our life, move forward in our relationship with God, move forward in relationship with others or whatever, until we have complete certainty, then doubt has won.
Yeah.
And doubt can be a tool, but it can't win, you know?
And I mean, as we've said, I think that's a worthwhile passage for people to read. I found it
yeah.
incredibly helpful. And one of the reasons why is that it focuses my doubt, that doubt can pop up in so many different ways that it's almost hard to know, okay, how do I go about addressing this thing that's causing doubt? And I think what the disciples modeled for us and what Jesus even asked them to say is, hey, before you think about anything else, what do you think about me?
Right.
And come back to me. So don't try to, is this Old Testament story true? Is this miracle? Did this really happen? Come back to, what do you think about me? And I do think it's that decision doesn't lie in a vacuum. And sometimes with our doubts, we don't do this enough, where it's easy to question, but we don't think about what we're stepping to
right.
when we step away from Jesus, which mm-hmm. is a question we should ask. And that's what they said, you know, if not you, then
where
who?
Else,
where else would I go?
Right.
And I think that's a good question for people to ask if they're in the middle of a season of doubt, is to say, okay, what do you think about Jesus? And if it's not him, then what is... Where are you deriving the meaning from your life? Where else does that make sense? And for me, that's been incredibly helpful to say, I don't have to have an answer for everything.
Yeah.
But I do need to come back to, what is the foundation of my faith? And do I really believe that there really isn't anywhere else I want to go
right.
than coming to Jesus, say, okay, he is worth exploring and making the foundation
mm-hmm.
of what it is I believe.
Yeah. And I think one just kind of one thing I would add too is when we recognize that God is wanting us and calling us to live by faith, faith is difficult.
Yeah.
And someday, when we go to heaven, there will be no such thing as faith. It'll be all certainty. And we're not in that day. And I think that sometimes, at least I have experienced in my life, I have an assumption of what Christian maturity will feel like as I grow in my relationship with God. I think that the times of distance with God is going to get shorter and shorter. I think that I will be more and more and more sure. I think that I will experience more of his presence more often, like all of those things. But when I look in the Bible and when I look at the heroes of the faith, or when I look at heroes in my life, that's not really the experience that they have. In fact, I think God makes faith much more meaningful when the distances of silence, you know, of answered prayer actually become longer and not shorter, you know, and those types of things that he's calling us to more and more and more faith. And so when we recognize that is part of God's plan for us to walk by faith and not by sight, it would make sense that faith is going to be something that we're going to wrestle with until we die, you know, that it's going to be hard and it's going to be challenging. And we should not feel like God has abandoned us. He's just calling us to more and more and more faith. And so I think that might be kind of a good thing for us to sort of wrap up with, you know, as we've talked about all of these things. I think that just to sort of sum up some of the, you know, we've talked about pushing into our doubts and sometimes, you know, doubting some things that we've always assumed sometimes, is sometimes a really good thing. Or, you know, when we wrestle with different things, consider what is it that we do know, you know, kind of as the disciples had seen Jesus do miracles. They had seen the changes that Jesus had wrought in people's lives, and they thought, well, where else are we going to go? And there were certain things that they did know, which caused them to move beyond their doubt. Push in, like research, talk to people. Don't bail on your faith and your Christian community, because doubt can be an incredible tool that God could use to strengthen our faith. And always recognize and remember that certainty is not the goal, that God is not hoping that we will finally get it and then be certain and not doubt anymore, or that faith will someday be easy, because then it won't be faith. It'll be sight. And he's calling us to live by faith.
There's always a faith step at the end of the day. At the end of whatever research, there is always a leap that has to. Those are great words. And I just want to thank you, Greg, and to our listeners, just for this first ever Page 2 podcast of doubting whether we could pull off a podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll find out. But we want to thank you for joining us today, and hope that you'll continue to journey with us as we really do try to dive behind some of the headlines that are out there, to try to make sense of this together and maybe some collective wisdom, and dig into the nuances of life, faith, and culture. We just would encourage you to subscribe. We're going to do this seasonally, where we will have a few episodes that we'll release, and would love you to journey with us. And we hope you'll continue the conversation and contact us as well. You can join the conversation by going to our website, page2podcast.com. And when you come, I hope you'll leave a comment and let us know what you're thinking or what you might want to hear more about in future episodes. As we finish out this inaugural episode of our podcast, we want to give a few special shout-outs to the Center for Church Renewal for letting us use their recording space, to David Powers for his technical expertise, to Reflect, our musician friend who provided some great music for our podcast. And also special thanks to Dre and Taffy Pavey, Scott Brown, and Dr. Bach for their contributions to this week's episode. And thanks to you for listening. We hope you'll join us next week for another edition of the Page 2 Podcast.